off the ball. GAA.
I thought Patrick Doyle could have saved that. It was straight at him, but like there was some ferocity of the shot, especially when you watch it live. The replay makes it look worse from the goalkeeper's perspective.
Yeah, it does.
But live, that's a thunder bastard.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Good evening and welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. That's right. The wait is nearly over. Only 24 hours to go until the Republic of Ireland versus North Macedonia. We have assembled a panel of boffins here in studio to tell us what to expect from the Republic of Ireland versus North Macedonia. Kevin Kilbane is going to be joining us in the football show later for a bumper preview of the Republic of Ireland versus North Macedonia. And you too can tell us how excited you are for the Republic of Ireland versus North Macedonia. Our number is 087-9180-180. Games really don't get bigger than this, do they? What a sad little life we have all endured for the last 5 days. Steve-O is here. Hello, Steve-O.
Good evening.
Mick is here. Hello, Mick.
Hi, Owen.
Arthur is here. Hello, Arthur.
Hello.
This is, of course, just another therapy session all the way till 10 p.m. We'd love for you to be involved. Can I start?
Do go ahead.
Am I the only one here who's had actual dreams about this over the last 4 days?
No.
No.
I slept terribly on Thursday night, I have to say. I woke up with this sense of loss on Friday morning.
Uh-huh.
Like, you know, like in my own bed as well. So I'm sure it was very different for yourself. You know, you're over there, you're much more involved in it. It was obviously going to be the case. But definitely woke up on Friday morning feeling, you know, that horrible feeling of I haven't figured it out yet, but something went terribly wrong.
But I've been having a recurring dream.
Okay.
Like every single night it's the first time in my life I've had recurring dreams. Like usually it's kind of a one and done and then you kind of wake up and then it's all over. But I keep having this weird experience where I'm rewatching the Czechia game and it's the same outcome, but it's no longer a semi-final. It's a sort of a mini table and there's another game and Ireland is still in with a chance of making the World Cup. And I'm probably going to have this dream again tonight. And there'll be a moment when I'm kind of in a half sense of sleep where I'm seeing the game all over again, but the stakes are lower and different and Ireland still have a chance of making the World Cup. So every night I have believed that Ireland is still going to the 2026 World Cup possibly.
That's sad.
Right.
You told very anyone. Hopeful though.
Not yet. One more night maybe.
Yeah. Keep an eye on it. Keep a log.
Yes. Well, this is the log.
Were you that actively, as much as one can be, were you that actively invested?
Yes.
That it hurt you in that way? It left a traumatic effect rather than just like,
Well, it definitely wasn't, let's all just move on with our lives.
No, but you're always on to the next thing. You know, there's always something, the sport carries on. It finds a way.
It certainly does. Know?
That it's sticking with you that harsh is interesting.
Mm. We haven't all
Are we been, over it?
I'm not over it, no. Well,
I'm
heading towards it, like, you know, but we haven't all been together since it happened, so I haven't told you about my culpability in the defeat.
Here we go.
Oh no, what did you do?
Yeah, I did something terrible. So I was watching the game at home. I was I had the kids. I didn't have the chance to go out and, you know, find like-minded folk to share an atmosphere with. So I watched it with my children for the first half and then they eventually went to bed, thank God. And then I watched the second half. But I listened to you guys at halftime, you know, and went in to watch the second half on the TV. And I listened to the radio on a smart speaker in the kitchen. And I'm mindful of the fact that when you turn that on, there'll be a couple of ads before it goes live. So when Kelleher saved the penalty, in my mad excitement, I ran out to the kitchen, told the smart speaker to switch on News Talk, turned it down so that the ads would be over, so that when we won, I would be able to listen to Steve-O and Shuey and yourself and everybody and get the thing. And then we never scored again.
You tempted fate.
I was back in for Finn Azaz and it all went horribly wrong from there. My excitement got the better of me. I made a terrible mistake and I'm sorry to the nation.
I dare say if people had to recount exactly what was going through their head when the Republic of Ireland were 2-0 up as well, they'd feel, you know, pretty ashamed and you know, off the mark with regards to what happened. I would certainly be one of those people, like just completely convinced.
It was really contrasting. Obviously, I was in Budapest for the win against Hungary, and Ireland win a game in incredibly heroic circumstances, and there was like, excuse me, was it 600? There, I'm trying to think how many Irish fans were there. However many Irish fans were there, anyway, they were tucked away in a corner, a little bit like away supporters go to St. James's Park. They're up in the gods. So you had this really weird experience of mental celebrations amongst the Irish fans and even among the media as well. You know, people are kind of going, yeah, we're on the way to a playoff for the World Cup. But the whole stadium was just zoom, just completely, because the Hungarians were really up for this game. I think it was 60,000 seater. You probably could have sold 80,000 tickets for that match for the demands among the Hungarian public. So you had that weird situation where there's this tiny proportion of fans celebrating this amazing kind of thing, but yet the majority of supporters in the ground are really dumbfounded, gobsmacked, disappointed. And yes, we were there on Thursday in Prague and we're all feeling absolutely destroyed, gutted. And yes, the most of the people in the stadium are all bouncing up and down, going absolutely crazy. The Czech supporters just thought it was the best thing ever.
It's so funny you say that as well, because I was obviously here listening, because once it kind of got anywhere down, obviously the radio will get that feed before anything with TV. So it was like all evening it was listening beforehand. It was listening primarily. And it became quite jarring during the shootout.
Yeah.
Because there was obviously a big enough crowd that you knew when it was a pro Czechia thing, if be it a save or a score or whatever it was, but it still wasn't, even that, because you're in the thrust of the excitement as well, that you didn't know straight away what had happened, be it save, be it goal, whatever it was, that the cheer, it wasn't like you're saying it had been in Hungary or whatever, it would have been deafening, the roar. But like the scale of it wasn't so far apart that you knew.
The Irish fans were so loud.
It was crazy. And you just like everything took, you kind of, it was your, whatever word you'd have after, or the kind of the first way your voice would go after, and the intonation would be up or down, it's negative.
Yeah.
It was a funny thing where you're almost getting the sense of it before you're getting any sort of actual clear idea.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have a massive match against North Macedonia tomorrow that we shouldn't in any way take lightly or overlook. But I suppose a few people might be paying attention to the same stadium hosting Denmark. Like, is it worse if they win?
If Czechia win?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's one of the small
comforts. Does that not make us better? Like, no, is it we could have done? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So which do you want? Do you want us to be on the cusp and but not there, but happy for the future?
I'd rather Denmark go out and beat them 10-0 tomorrow night.
I kind of think I agree, yeah. But I think it might put the connection and the sense of good feeling and goodwill towards the team that I think will ultimately be a benefit in the long run.
But I'm going
to think it might hurt that a little bit, not to mention the matches that they have to play in a few months.
I'll stop having nightmares.
Well, that might help. Yeah, personally, it might help. Yeah.
Just to add as well, like, it seemed like, I know a lot of people are saying, wow, well, we would have been beaten by Denmark anyway. And I'm not buying that one, because I watched their final group match against Scotland at Hampden Park.
Yeah, they weren't very good. Yeah.
And they absolutely the bed, if you know what I mean. They bottle it. They absolutely bottle it. And fair enough, they hammered North Macedonia 4-0. No great shakes, are they, the North Macedonians?
Find out tomorrow night.
Well, we might
live on off the ball.
I think they're going through like a mini crisis as well. like a Czechia time crisis, are they?
Revenge for Skopje in 99.
They're not happy with how things played out last Thursday. Experienced players have left the squad in protest.
But I just feel an Irish team, if they'd beaten Czechia on the wave of, you know, whether it even had been in a penalty shootout, on the wave of beating Hungary and Portugal, knocking the Czechs out, going to Dublin to play Denmark in a home game, I still would have given Ireland a huge chance to win that match, despite what everybody would have felt, because the Denmark's performance at Hampden Park was atrocious, absolutely atrocious. And like Scotland do, probably player for player, pound for pound, have a better squad than us, but you would feel that Ireland could have caused them similar problems.
The one thing that maybe was a bit of a kind of a red flag before in the middle of the Ireland-Czechia game is just that this game was going to extra time and then subsequently penalties, whereas the Denmark team had a cakewalk on Thursday night comparatively. Patrick's been in touch to say the only thing more depressing than Thursday's result is having to play a dead rubber friendly tomorrow night. And then Owen says, this Macedonia game is like going to a wake for someone you don't even like. I hope that's a real life analogy, that Owen has actually gone to a wake for somebody he doesn't even like, and this is only the second time in his life that he's actually felt this feeling.
I'd say it's almost like going to a wake for somebody you don't even know. I don't think of any, I have no feelings about the North Macedonians one way or another.
Yeah, like, I mean, it's,
surely the wake is for Ireland.
If the wake's for Ireland, I thought we had rediscovered the connection. So it's for someone you really love.
Yeah, this is, like, to be honest, I actually think, and I've talked to a couple of people who are going to the game, and a lot of people had the season tickets bought, and, you know, on the basis of they needed the ticket if it was the Denmark game. And I thought, nobody's not going, from what I've seen. Like, you know, the people, I think there's a welcome, you know, a kind of, we're behind you.
Yeah.
Is it a farewell for Seamus Coleman? I don't know, like, it's not guaranteed by any means, but I do think a lot of people will feel like they're probably going to be saying goodbye to Seamus Coleman in an Ireland shirt. And, you know, it's the end of this. Every international window in some ways, and especially at the end of every season, is a goodbye to this particular team. And I think they have given us a bit of life and joy over the last few months. And it probably is. I think the way we went down makes this a little bit less depressing, funnily enough. It's more depressing that it's existing.
Yes.
But the actual occasion, I think, would be less depressing than if we'd gone out, lost 3-0 and have to, you know, turn up to this game on Tuesday night. I think the Irish fans could make something out tomorrow night, I have to say.
The other possibility here is that Hamer goes full freestyle tomorrow night with this free shot, like, plays Nathan Collins not only in midfield but in like a number 10 role, brings Wes Hoolihan out of retirement, like starts Stephen Ireland in midfield, and all of a sudden then like people are the ticket prices go right back up. So,
well, only you saw the reaction of the fans after the game in Prague. Like, they stayed back for a long time, and the players and the coaching staff all went over to that corner of the ground, and they were there for a long time just watching the supporters singing and chanting in support of them. So from that, you would take that it backs up what you were saying, Mick, about there will be people going tomorrow night to back the team. I could understand maybe if there's people living a long, long way from the Aviva Stadium, especially yeah. with the way diesel prices are going at the moment, fuel prices and all, why maybe some people might have to pull out. That's fair enough. But I think they'll get a good reception tomorrow.
Yeah, Emma points out as well that there's the FAI bonus fan points for going to tomorrow night's game as well, which I'm sure is going to be a consideration, given how tough it was to get tickets for Prague last week.
Did you feel like, from the people you spoke to in Prague, it seemed to be certainly the case with the interviews we heard coming back, there was a real sense of hierarchy and right and wrong amongst the Irish fans? There was a sense of kind of like, you know, no, didn't even look for a ticket. Sure, that's belonging to the people who were always going and all this. I'm here for the trip and, you know, my mates are people who deserve the ticket. I don't know, maybe that was just the collective reporting back and the Schlieveenism was happening in an underhanded way.
Yeah.
But it did seem as though there was a sort of a very much a kind of an understanding of the rights and wrongs of the game.
Correct. Although there was no misgivings about getting yourself into the home section. It was just an understanding that you're putting, you know, your own safety into the lap of the gods is kind of how it was being framed on Wednesday night. But as it turned out, it was absolutely perfect.
Yeah, on that, I spoke to somebody who was in the home end behind the goal near the Irish away supporters and said that they were out in the concourse, you know, with mixing with the Czech fans, and they said it was all great.
Yeah,
it was really, really good. And look, yeah, you don't overplay the best fans in the world thing, but it is good, because I've been to some trips maybe where things got a bit out of hand. I'm not saying, you know, anything bad, but just general tomfoolery. But I think it was a trip where the Irish supporters definitely left a good mark in Prague, and I think that should be definitely commended.
Our number is 0879 180 180. Keeps your WhatsApps coming into us. Stephen Doyle, where are we starting tonight on the news round?
Yeah, we might start with the senior women's team on, because there's a brand new name in the 24-player squad revealed today by head coach Carla Ward for next month's World Cup qualifiers. Bohemians midfielder Ava Brennan has received her first senior international call-up for those games against Poland back-to-back. Ward is also able to include Lily Ag and Jessu in her 24-player selection after both recovered from respective injuries. Ag hasn't featured since the end of 2024, having recovered from an ACL injury and a subsequent cancer diagnosis. Midfield playmaker Denise O'Sullivan, who missed the second match of the last window with a knee problem, is also included. And from the last squad, Jamie Finn and Tara O'Hanlon drop out, while Hayley Nolan is now on the injury list. Ireland are yet to earn a point in the group after narrow defeats to France and the Netherlands, and will play Poland back-to-back in Gdansk on April 14th and Dublin on April 18th. The 18-year-old Brennan, who is the only League of Ireland player in the squad, well, Ward explained why she'd been impressed by the Bows midfielder.
When I first came in, the development squad had a game, I think last February it was, and that game she stood out. And I kept saying, for the next couple of days, I kept talking to the technical staff about Ava, and I said, she's got something. And I said, she does the basics really, really well. I've watched her a lot since. You know, we were close to calling her up for a previous camp in the friendly window before Christmas, but I think the under-19s had a big game and that was important. But I'd like to see her in this environment, because when I say there's not many players that do the basics brilliant, and I know that's, you know, she's playing in the League of Ireland, which we know isn't a full-time league as yet, but I'd like to see if she can do that at this level.
Okay, so that's the situation with the women's national team back on the field in a couple of weeks. On the men's front, who's the latest player to be ruled out of tomorrow night's friendly?
Yeah, Preston club man Robbie Brady is out of that meeting with North Macedonia at the Aviva Stadium in Dublin. He felt a tightness in his hamstring following the World Cup playoff loss to Czechia in Prague last week, and he won't be risked for this game. The boys in green are already without Sammy Smodic, who was taken to hospital after that knock he sustained in Prague. He's back at Derby County, continuing his recovery, while Jack Taylor also returned home to tend to his wife, who fell ill. We believe she is on the mend. Head coach Seamer Hall-Grimson has stated he isn't looking to experiment in the game which pits two of the losing sides from the World Cup playoffs against each other. Ireland looking to bounce back from that penalty shootout defeat to the Czechs, while North Macedonia will still be hurting after being hammered 4-0 away to Denmark. Well, Robbie, or I should say Portsmouth winger Milenic Ali, was drafted in for the first time on Sunday. He could make his debut at the Aviva Stadium. As a youth, he played for Dublin club St Francis and Esker Celtic. Uncapped Stoke City midfielder Bosun Lawal could also earn his first cap after missing out on the final squad in Prague, having returned from injury. Hall-Grimson can make 8 substitutions in 3 slots in the game, which means he may not make too many changes to his starting team. Centre-back Dara O'Shea explained why this match is important for the squad.
You know, for us, we're professionals and you've got to move on to the next game, and I think the next game is really important for us as a group. Everything we've created now and the feeling we have within the group and the confidence, it's important to, you know, go out tomorrow with a solid performance, and a performance that we are proud of and that people can be proud of too. Continue on our run. You know, we've spoke about, you know, we're building towards Euro 2028 now, and it's important, you know, that we keep going in the right direction, and I feel like we have been, and that confidence that's in the group, it's important to keep it there.
Yes, indeed, Dara O'Shea there speaking. And of course, Steve-O, you'll be calling the game tomorrow night on
Yep.
the ball.
Myself and Stewie Byrne, looking forward to that one. From 7 o'clock, we'll have the team news, hopefully on off the ball. But I think they'll go out and give it a lash, score a couple of goals, few goals. I can see Ireland getting a big win in that game.
Yeah, try to keep the run up.
Yeah.
Let him score, then take him off.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I said he's got
I'd say the AZ Alkmaar boss now is like we were a couple of weeks ago. Wrap him up in cotton wool, lads.
Can imagine. He's got Niall Quinn in the crosshairs now, you'd have to say. Like, I mean, getting to that, was it 22 goals that Quinn got?
21. Yeah, so he's got 11, doesn't he?
Yeah,
man,
so
isn't it? Can
put
you,
out weights, can't be.
But you remember, the 90s was...
Six in 3 games, though.
I mean, so all he's got to do is play another 3 games.
But it was just mad, like, the amount, the length of time we were waiting for somebody to break that Niall Quinn record, and it just went on for ages and ages and ages, and then...
Stapleton record, and then Quinn broke it. Robbie basically passed him out a few weeks later, or maybe a year later.
But it was just, incredible. Now we've got, you know, strikers coming out of our ears.
It's only a couple of days.
Long way to go to get the real record, of course. And Niall Quinn in second place is the only thing people can aspire to.
We are only a couple of days away until the Premier League officially takes our attention away from this mystery.
Just over a week, actually. We've got FA Cup this weekend.
League of Ireland this weekend.
It completely cut me off the hop as well. I was there going through, looking at my Premier League fictions, Saturday, Sunday, there's nothing.
Liverpool versus Manchester City on Saturday, if I'm not mistaken. So that'll be a good one to get back into English football. As I say, League of Ireland back as well. But on the English football front, we have a latest on Tottenham search for a new head coach.
Yeah, the soap opera continues. It's been widely reported the Premier League strugglers are in advanced talks with former Brighton boss Roberto De Zerbi. It's understood the Italian was open to the head coach role, but his preference had been to wait until the end of the season. Tottenham, though, are now stepping up their efforts to agree an immediate deal. It is thought Spurs would be offering the 46-year-old a long-term contract at the club. I've seen 5 years being mentioned. De Zerbi is available following his exit from Marseille in February, while Spurs are 17th in the Premier League, 1 point above the relegation zone, with no league wins in 2026.
Okay, who's the go-to candidate here?
De Zerbi waiting until the summer. You know, I don't think he gets the job in the summer if they stay up. I don't think De Zerbi's that sought after anymore, is he?
Oh, he would be.
Is he?
Yeah.
One of those.
I think so, but his reputation now, because he's such a reputation manager, though.
He's Villas Boas, basically, at this stage.
He's also a systems manager. We know how big he is on his systems. And, like, we're looking at a club here, just need to get out of relegation.
They
don't need a fella going in for 3 weeks saying, right, I need my centre-back here, I need my midfielder here. It's like, this is an absolutely crazy appointment. Like, it's just, and for a man with such a, we're led to believe, a fiery kind of temperament, to be going in and trying to handle that Tottenham squad just seems like a complete disaster waiting to happen.
It's almost as if the people in charge don't know what they're doing.
who's an uncrazy appointment?
I kind of thought Sean Dyche would be, but it seems...
You can't be putting Sean Dyche into Tottenham.
Why?
You just can't be doing that.
I just mean to the end of the season. Like, he said before.
You can't be throwing Sean Dyche into that situation.
There must be other managers around.
Tottenham cannot be turning their noses up. And you're like, they're bloody mentioned Harry Redknapp.
Roy Hodgson is managing
Bristol City. Like, it's just...
How far have Spurs followed that? Like, Tim Sherwood, right? Who, like, you know, fair enough, I know he doesn't probably do humility. But, like, he's openly asking for the Spurs job on television on a regular basis. He hasn't managed a team in 10 years.
And he's asking this guy.
He hasn't managed anyone in 10 years and he's looking for the Spurs job. That's how far Spurs have fallen.
And he's like going over to the Sky Sports News digital team and saying, can you actually put that out on the internet for me? Can you do my work? And it actually might happen. I'd sooner give it Redknapp than Dyche.
No, we're just...
But Dyche versus Tim Sherwood's more of a dead heat.
Are you talking about for entertainment value or...?
No, genuinely.
But, like, is Martin Yall not knocking around or something? Could they not get, like, an actual manager? Like,
I think this is a team full of personalities who clearly are not dealing with the relegation reality, the prospect of that, very well at all. And I think the sight of Sean Dyche actually won't go down well with them. It should. Like, he should have the tools to be able to, you know, tell them to cop on and, you know, get them tightened up at the back and, you know, just save them from relegation. But I actually think from what we've seen from various reports, say, in The Athletic, that certain players are content if this happens because they've got an exit out of this club at the end of the season. I'd be a little bit concerned about some of the personalities in that group and how they would react to a quote-unquote relegation-saving manager to come in. Like a Dyche or an Allardyce. Yeah.
Do they need someone to just, like, could Hugo Lloris do the job? You know what I mean? No, seriously, though. I just mean, like, someone who just, like, all you need is, like, just a bit of respect of the players. Most of them knowing you already, and you just go out and just, like, play a bit of football. You need to win about 3 games in your next 8 games.
Max,
that's all. You probably actually need 2 wins, and they'll be fine. It's literally the only, and it's, like, short-term. Roberto De Zerbi. I think, like... Again, he's going to come and try and reinvent the wheel. Like, you've got a few, you've got 7 games here.
I'm sure he can do pragmatism. I'm sure he won't, you know, he'll go like, this is the job in front of me right now.
But then you're stuck with him. Then he's got a 5-year contract.
I think he'll pander to the egos there better than, say, a Dyche. And I think, crucially, he won't be bad cop in the way that Tudor was, because if he were to do that, he'd be just the biggest idiot in the history of football. That clearly just did
but
not
he's
work.
Not that,
like, yeah. Tudor tried to go from bad cop to good cop, and they realised, actually, you're the same guy. You can't just change your shtick because the bad cop stuff went down really badly in this dressing room. So that was a disaster. We know that they need an arm around the shoulder, but it needs to be a man of gravitas and, you know, with some sort of European pedigree. And
sorry to put a downer on it as well, but there's kind of wider issues. You know, there are Tottenham supporter groups who would be against De Zerbi's appointment just for what happened in Marseille in relation to signing Mason Greenwood. And they would have their kind of, you know, issues with bringing a manager who was happy with the player like Mason Greenwood in the Marseille team, considering his recent history.
We have postponed the annihilation of Kerry by Donegal yesterday. And no, if we're going to do it after the break, though, because the news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film-coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 mil tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following a pharmacist consultation. Thanks very much to Christy Keogh from getting in touch with a photoshopped image of Davy Fitz in a Spurs suit. That's his suggestion to take over on a permanent basis. Dermot Keenan says Matt Chapman, Spurs fan on Channel 4 Racing at Cheltenham, interviewed Harry Redknapp and nearly begged him to take over for the rest of the season. And Rob says May as well get Adrian Barry in the names this lad is throwing out. Laughing emoji, I'm not sure. Is that in relation to...
What lad?
Is it you or is it one of the commenters? Adrian might do an okay job. Steve-O, you're turning to Gaelic Games.
At last.
The football that took place at Croke Park yesterday.
Yes, were you there?
I was not.
Donegal, the National Football League Division 1 champions for just the second time in their history. They were too good for the All-Ireland champs, Kerry. Coming out on top in yesterday's final at a very windy Croke Park by 320 to 210. It was the first decider Jim McInnes' side played against Kerry after last year's All-Ireland final disappointment. It was also the heaviest loss for Kerry in the league in 25 years. Here is the Donegal boss Jim McInnes on his sweeper-keeper Gavin Mulraney marking Kerry outfield players before fielding a question from our own Tommy Rooney.
What you're saying is if it doesn't work, it's a disaster. that's the other side of the coin, you know. But no, listen, that was his own intuition and situational, and he was making good decisions there. There was some parts of it tactical, but you know, you have to trust them to make good decisions as well.
Kick out for massive, obviously. I think you won seven on the spin in that spell and got maybe 10 points in a row.
Yeah.
You really strangled the likes of Kerry. Felt like a bit of a reversal on last year's then.
Listen, Tommy, that's the battle everybody's facing every day of the week. You know, we were looking at the analysis during the week there of Armagh against Kerry, and Kerry did a serious number on the Armagh kick-out early in the game, and they were 10 points to nil up, and then all of a sudden the thing starts to turn, and Armagh then are back level because they did a serious number on the kick-out. That's just the game. It's hard to get them away. The 40-metre arc has changed the game. If you had a good day and you're able to either win it clean or win a break, and the next one and the next one, there's massive momentum from that, and that's really how it played out today. You know, we were able to get our own away and we were able to win a number of carries early in the game, and it settled us.
It feels like the reaction to what happened yesterday is too obvious for it to actually materialise, and the reaction is that Kerry suffered a heavy defeat out of the blue last year in the championship, and they recovered to win the All-Ireland in spectacular fashion. I think a lot of people are coming away from yesterday looking at this being like, it's going to be grand. Don't worry about this. This is so early in the campaign, far earlier even than the defeat to Meath last year in Tullamore occurred. They're going on their warm weather training camp. This is going to be fuel in the engine for Kerry as the summer develops. But rarely do those narratives actually end up being as tidy as they seem when you actually utter them. Back-to-back championships are bloody hard, and maybe that's a reason why Kerry struggled yesterday, is that trying to get themselves back up to that height again this year is going to be an ongoing challenge throughout 2026.
It might be, but the way the football is set up now, like, they'll be there or thereabouts in, you know, the middle of June, and it's from there they have to go, and they obviously timed that amazingly last year. Like, I remember you being post that Meade game, was talking in the studio on air, I believe, like, you know, about how Kerry just weren't able to come back from this with the injuries.
Thought they were dead, yeah.
And you know, obviously, at half-time in the Armagh game, you look like you were right, and then everything turns, and they have probably the best 2.5 game run in Kerry's history, which is bloody saying something. So I understand your concern, but I think it's such a long year. I think there's so many... Like, it's not as if they've been playing badly up until this point. They've had some really, really good performances, some fine performances, and a really poor one.
It was 21 points at one stage yesterday.
Oh, like that scoreline doesn't, if anybody's listening in today, that scoreline of 320 to 210 doesn't reflect it at all.
Oh.
It's bigger, much bigger. And that's a hammering. And it was much bigger.
Kind of.
They were 1-1
yeah,
for like an hour.
They were. Their own scoring was remarkably low. But it was at the same point a kind of almost the inverse of what they did to Armagh in even a shorter thing, where it was quick bursts of goals. And it like that the game was killed off, and then it was kind of like, what do we do now? Or like, I don't know if it reflects. I know what you're saying in terms of for the nature of the game, but at the same time, I don't know what that means either. We're not saying Donegal are a better team than Kerry. I think it was a feature of that game that wasn't necessarily something that is replicable easily.
Yeah.
You can't, you know what I mean? You can't just...
I'm sure some people are saying that Donegal are a better team than Kerry after that yesterday. I think it's a totally reasonable take to have.
Are they? I wonder, are they smaller price? I meant to check that, actually.
Compared to yesterday, of course they are.
But compared to Kerry, I meant.
No, I don't believe they are.
That hasn't changed. So there is an element. I do think we have to understand that it is a match in March. And no matter what, it's only going to matter so much when it comes to the championship. But from Donegal's point of view, I think it's more significant than from Kerry's. Because I think Kerry have the opportunity, at least, to make this not matter at all. But from Donegal's point of view, we talked last week about whether it matters. You know, whether Jim downplaying it was ridiculous. And I think we made that point. It was like, you know, you should go and try and take your opportunity. It's not going to affect what happens in the championship, but it might give you something. It's something that's there to be won. And Kerry answered what happened in, or Donegal answered what happened in the All-Ireland final last year with an unbelievable performance yesterday. And I think that can't do them any harm whatsoever. If it doesn't help them, so be it. But there's a very, very good chance it does help them. And when they meet Kerry again in the summer, they're going in there not with the memories of what happened in the All-Ireland final last year. They're going in with the memories of what happened in the league final. And that's brilliant.
I don't know.
I would say that was basically a Yerra football performance yesterday from Kerry.
Kerry's point of view,
What do you mean by that now?
But do you think anybody down at Kerry is going,
you can't say that.
Oh, no. We're after getting hammered by Donegal. This is like a big... Do you think anybody in Kerry now... you should know. Nobody in Kerry cares about this game. It's the league. It was like I said to you last week. It's like Real Madrid. They only care about winning European Cups. If they lose the league, they don't care.
But Jack O'Connor's never won an All-Ireland without winning the league. The league final has been a big deal for him.
Yeah, but like, honestly, I think all he cares about now is winning another... He's never won back-to-back All-Irelands.
And he's never won the All-Ireland without winning the league.
But, come on.
Has he won back to leagues?
All he cares about is all he cares about is getting his team to peak. Like, I can remember there was when Dublin, in the early days of Jim Gavin's success, were always concerned about, you know, firing on all fronts, all competitions. But towards the end, when they were going for the five and the six in a row, the league became, you know, inconsequential for that Dublin
team.
But
not in year two or year three of the five in a row. Like,
yeah,
even,
but this is different.
16,
Jack O'Connor 17. Hasn't got as long to go, I don't think, as a manager, has he? Like, you know,
no, that's fair.
If he wants to win back-to-back, he's got to do it this year. And I really don't think he cares about this league. He just wants to get this team to peak this year for the All-Ireland final.
But why would
forget
that,
about the league.
Why would them not be playing well on Sunday not be a help towards the rest of the year? Because you got to the league final. I understand.
They didn't bang it off, like...
Yeah.
They were definitely off.
They didn't get them out for a run out. You know, it's a bit of a, you know, get a few more minutes into the legs. It's not really about the performance.
I think it's never about as simple as that.
I don't think we'll all think that way, Steve-O. I really don't. I think we'll be all coming into the final this year looking back at that match going, like, that league match. We won't be basing it. Like, I can see Donegal and Kerry, they can be in the final, can't they?
Everything's on the table this year.
So I think we could be looking at another Donegal-Kerry final, and in the analysis of it, we'd be all going, do you remember they met in the league? Doesn't matter.
We could definitely have the danger of being massively overreacting to any result, especially early in the year. Like, the good teams will find a way over the course of the year, and what happens when you get to the last eight is what will decide the All-Ireland. Mm. Because there are certain teams, Kerry definitely being one of them, and I think Donegal are one of them, that won't go out before that stage. Yeah. And then... let's see what happens, you know.
Steve-O, what have you got next for us?
Yes, then moving on to, lost my script there. Actually, moving on, of course, the Division 2 final was on yesterday as well. Meath beating Cork to go up to the top tier, of course, as the Division 2 champions. Rory Kinsler scoring 5 points as the Royals saw the challenge of the Rebels by 2 points. An incredible finish by Robbie Brennan's side. They outscored Cork by 9 points to 1-1 after the 46th minute. I think Meath are going to have a big impact in the championship.
They certainly will. We're going to have much more on this with Darren O'Sullivan and Damon McGee, which is coming up after the break, but not been a good month for Dublin Gaelic Games fans, Steve-O.
Yeah, we're hurling county now on. Just a week after the relegation of the men's team, the women's team met the same fate. The All-Ireland champions were relegated from Division 1 of the National League. They beat Cork 2-8 to 1-6, but other results meant they couldn't prevent falling into the second tier for next season. Kildare were also relegated following their 2-10 to 2-9 loss to Kerry. Meath and Armagh drew 11 points to 1-8, while Waterford got the better of final bound Galway by 2-12 to 12 points. Now, on those deciders, the Division 1 final between Cork and Galway has been fixed for the TUS Gaelic grounds. That match will throw in at 5 o'clock on Saturday, April 11th. The Division 2 final between Cavan and Donegal will take place on the same day in Clonus at 3 o'clock. On Sunday, April 12th, the Division 3 final will see Antrim and Louth clash with no venue or time confirmed just yet. And Carlow will play Leitrim at Grant Heating St Brendan's Park on the same day, but no throw-in time has been revealed.
On to rugby then. There's some potential IRFU recruitment news.
Yeah, it's a good scoop for the Irish Independent. This one on there reporting that the IRFU are attempting to lure one of Australia's brightest young prospects with prop Massimo Dellutis, weighing up a potential switch in allegiance. The 22-year-old, described as one of the most powerful young forwards in the game, is said to be considering a life-changing move to Ireland. He qualifies for Ireland on his mother's side of the family. It would be a major coup for Andy Farrell's team and strengthen front row plans. However, he did play for Australia A in 2024, and there's no indication as to which province he might turn out for.
We might finish up then on this golf story, because Paul McGinley's been talking about Tiger.
Yeah, the former Ryder Cup captain feels Woods has bigger issues on his plate than a return to the Masters. The 15-time major winner was in a car crash in Florida on Friday. He was unharmed in the incident. Woods, who has battled a series of recent injuries in recent years, faces renewed uncertainty over his playing schedule. Speaking to Sky Sports, McGinley stated that Woods, who was a five-time winner at Augusta, needs to turn his focus elsewhere.
You know, I'd say his whole life is in turmoil at this moment in time. A whole reconsideration of how he's living his life. Obviously coming back from serious injury again last year. Obviously on strong medication to try to get himself up to speed and try to rush to get ready for the Masters. I think he's got much bigger challenges going on than whether he plays in the Masters or not at the moment.
Okay, we'll come back to the story during the week, I'm sure, regarding Tiger Woods. Stephen Doyle, thank you very much for this Monday News Round. Mick and Arthur, thanks for popping in. Thank you for this therapy session.
Off the Ball Daily.